Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And purport. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. By strength of scientific knowledge, one should be well situated in absolute realization and thus be able to extinguish all material desires. One should then give up the material body by blocking the air hole through which the stool is evacuated with the heel of one's foot and by lifting the life air from one place to another in the six primary places. So, purport. There are many Duratmas who claim to have realized themselves as Brahman and yet are unable to conquer material desires. In the Bhagavad Gita 1854, it is clearly explained that an absolutely self-realized soul becomes completely aloof from all material desires. Material desires are based on the false ego of the living being and are exhibited by childish and useless activities to conquer the laws of material nature and by his desire to lord it over the resources of the five elements. With such a mentality, one is led to believe the strength of material science with its discovery of atomic energy and space travel by mechanical vehicles. And by such tiny advancements in the material science, the false ego tries to challenge even the strength of the Supreme Lord, who can finish all man's tiny endeavors in less than a second. The well-situated self or Brahman-realized soul perfectly understands that the Supreme Brahman or the personality of Godhead is the all-powerful Vasudeva and that he, the self-realized living being, is part and parcel of the Supreme Whole. As such, his constitutional position is to cooperate with him in all respects in the transcendental relation and of the served and the servitor. Such a self-realized soul ceases to exhibit his useless activities of attempting to lord it over the material nature. Being scientifically well informed, he fully engages himself in faithful devotion to the Lord. The expert yogi has thoroughly practiced to control the control of the life air by the prescribed method of yoga system, is advised to quit the body as follows. He should plug up the evacuating hole with the heel of the foot and then progressively move the life air on and on to the six places of navel, abdomen, heart, chest, palate, eyebrows, and cerebral pit. Controlling the life air by the prescribed yogic process is mechanical, and the practice is more or less a physical endeavor for spiritual perfection. In the olden days, such practice was very common for the transcendentalist, for the mode of life and character in those days was favorable. But in modern days, when the influence of Kali Age is so disturbing. Practically everyone is untrained in the art of bodily exercise. Concentration of the mind is more easily attained in these days by chanting the holy name of the Lord. The results are more effective than those derived from the inner exercise of the life air. It's an interesting purport there. And there is much to speak on. But it says it's a scientific, by strength of scientific knowledge. And in the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about this, that actually in the course of time, this science as it is appears to be lost. So Prabhupada, he actually always confirms that actually spiritual knowledge is has a scientific basis, that in fact it's an experiment, actually, as the material scientists do with the material elements. It's an experimental with the practice of bhakti yoga. And so we have the three stages of bhakti yoga. Sri Sri Radha Gokunanda Kijai, Sri Sri Gauranitai Kijai, Sri Sri Sitaram Lakshmana Hanuman Kijai. So, which is Sambandha Gyan. We find out who Krishna is according to the scriptures and from the spiritual master, and our relationship with him. So we get that knowledge to start off with. And then this is under guidance, either Shiksha or Diksha Gurus. And then it goes through Abhideya, the process of practice. Now, practice has to be there, and we see here that the practices called for in bygone ages are not within the ability of the person that's in this day and age, in the age of Kali. They can't sustain this practice. In fact, it becomes just another form of exercise, and they use it and go to yoga studios, and then they do maybe twice a week and then practice at home. But it's still a physical a physical effort. It's an effort that comes from us. But in bhakti yoga, there is some effort. So abhideya is practice. It's a discipline. Whatever we have also comes through disciplic succession. In other words, that's a discipline in itself. We have to pass on this knowledge in accordance with our guides, whether it be through sadhu, sastra, and guru. This has to be passed on through this process. And generally, those who are not initiated, they have their shiksha gurus, the ones that are telling them within the ashram, you know, what the principles are of living in the ashram. But also then the actual services themselves, they have another little shiksha guru who tells them how to put garlands together, how they can sweep the floor, clean the temple, and in certain ways. And then to get some consistency within their practices. And then having practiced, you know, maybe for a week in the same service, they can get a feel for it. And then they pass on to the next person, because then the other person comes along and practices that cleaning or helping with the cooks or whatever. And so you get to know your Shiksha gurus, what they've taught you. And so this is good instruction because it's in line with Prabhupada's guidance. And that's the principle. We're following Prabhupada's rules and regulations. So just working our way through it, there are many Duryatmas that claim to have realized themselves as Brahman and yet are unable to conquer the material desires. And Bhagavad Gita 1854, which I have here. Excuse me. If you bear with me, I don't have that ability that some do to memorize all these things. And it says here, if I could focus. Brahma Bhuta Prashanatma Na Sochati Na Kanchati Sama Sarvesu Bhuteshu Ma Bhaktim Labhate Param. One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He's equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service to me. And so, with this reference, the conquering of material desires has its symptoms of those who have done it. And of course, we have examples within ISKCON of those who's followed Prabhupada's rules and regulations, our gurus, but also our Shiksha gurus, because they learn from their gurus, to follow these principles. And basically, when we practice them, we start to feel that actually, like going to Mangal Aarti or the Guru Puja, all these things and practices, deity worship, it starts to have some effect. It starts to become blissful, and you don't want to do without it. This is a nice sign. And so in Bhagavad Gita 259, it says here, it says that the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. By ceasing such engagement, one experiences a higher taste. And he's fixed in his consciousness. So it's the higher taste that eventually comes with the practice that you feel that actually this is, I really find some joy, experience joy in these practices. It becomes part of your life and that actually you never want to do without them. And I remember from, I think it was Janani Vas or Pankajanri Prabhu, the Mayapur Pujari, the head Pujaris there. I can't remember which one it was, but he said, he was asked a question by one of the ladies there. How do we know, what our attachment is? And he said, he didn't actually answer. He left the answer up to her, and he said, Now, if I take this Bhagavad Gita away, if I take this the chanting beat away, and the kirtan, how would you feel? She immediately knew. Because without those, there's a taste, and we would miss it. In other words, that actually we miss it like when we miss a person. It's part of our persona, a relationship with our practices, that actually we should start to become attached to the practices, which actually are another form of Krishna. You know, it's that actually to practice Krishna consciousness is devotional service, bhakti yoga. The process is that by practice we become attached and we don't want to let it go. Certainly I can remember, certainly when I was in married life, I found it very difficult to live with somebody, because I'd had a nice mum, and of course your wife's not your mum, and they won't do the things you want. Actually, you have to learn what fulfills them and not necessarily fulfills your desires. In other words, there's sacrifice of your own desires, and so it was a very painful experience that I had to go through in trying to behave in such a way as a married person, making that commitment that marriage is a sacrifice, that actually, but in the case of Krishna consciousness, the sacrifice is made easier. And the interesting part of that, Gaukavinda Swami, Gauri Kishore Das Babaji, he was quoting, that actually, this wife is Krishna's dasi, not your dasi. And this husband is Krishna's das, not your das. You know? So we start to understand that actually, and so you're both dasi and dasi, das of Krishna. And so you help each other to form that relationship with Krishna, not from each other. We can't be the shelter of each other. We can be the support of each other. And this is the whole thing about devotional life in the ashram. We have to be the support of each other. And no matter what we think, we have to go through these trials and tribulations of learning to know each other and what pleases each other and what doesn't please each other. And that can be a bit of a rough ride at times, but it's there. So the bliss starts to know that actually when we discipline ourselves and we start to learn to get to know each other, a friendship of a sort, because of out of respect for each other, then we start to serve each other. And from what service comes love, just like the mother serves the baby. This bond of helplessness, which us trainees or neophytes have to experience, but it's, we're given a father, a mum in spiritual life who looks after us, and we build up a relationship with them. And so gradually we learn what pleases them. And so Krishna's really pleased when we serve his devotees. And this is what, actually, that simple, that wonderful class by Kartik Chandra Prabhu. He gave, and he went through very complex tattva to start off with in that class that was difficult for me to keep track of. It was a bit of a testing ground. I thought, you know, how am I going to remember all this? Because for different stages of bhakti, there's difference within those stages. And then at the end he gave this explanation about actually having how a disciple of Ramanujacharya, though he was had a city, you could say, that he could speak with the deities and get replies from the deities. And people used to come to him, and so he'd speak with the deities, and then, you know, and give the answers. And then somebody asked him the same question. It may have been Ramanujan. So he said, he asked him, you know, will I go back to Godhead? You know, because he had this power and relationship with the deities. And he said, no. So we find out that actually, when they have a city, a power, which these people and these yogis try and acquire, it's by their own ability, they think. But actually it's not. It's just a material effort. But with Bhakti Yoga is revealed to you as you practice it. And it comes from the Lord himself or your Shiksha Gurus or the devotees. That then you get a response that somehow they're satisfied. And this is our happiness, is their satisfaction. You know, so to get happiness, we have to give happiness. We have to learn to sacrifice and give to others. And this is the principles of Bhakti Yoga. So now to just finish running through this purport again. Sorry, bear with me. Sorry, we're verging on time. Yes. So he says that Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita, my abode, and there exists unlimited spiritual sky called the Vaikunthas, the abode of the personality of Godhead. And so we have to know that actually there's a goal, just as George Harrison found out, that material life wasn't satisfying. He found out from Prabhupada there was another place to go to. Pure devotees of the Lord are absolutely in harmony with the personality of Godhead, or in other words, they always think of the Lord as their dependable friend and well-wisher. They do not care for any mundane creature up to Lord Brahma, the Lord of the universe. Only they can definitely have a clear vision. So we need this person who can see us. And then it says here, he says, such pure devotees being perfectly directed by the Supreme One do not create any artificial perplexity of matter in the transcendental understanding of wasting time discussing Brahman or Maya. So, and so Prabhupada continues and discusses impersonalists. So, what we then find out is we concern ourselves. We don't concern ourselves with speculation. They're stumbling blocks. They're for the impersonalists. There are also classes who pose themselves as devotees of the Lord, to maintain an idea of salvation by becoming one with the impersonal Brahman. They wrongly manufacture their own way of devotional service and commit debauchery and mislead others who are simpletons and debauchees. So, or crooked souls in the dress of a Mahatma, such non-devotees and debauchees are completely excluded from the transcendental presentation. I'm not sure what's happening here. That was the previous thing. So here, to continue really, is the all-passive, powerful Vasudeva, the self-realized being, is part and parcel of the Supreme Whole. As such, his constitutional position is to cooperate with him in all respect. So we try and cooperate in our practices, and the self-realized soul ceases to exhibit his useless activities in attempting to please it and lord it over material nature. So he's being scientifically transformed. He engages himself in faithful devotion to the Lord. And the final part of the Bhagavatam. But in modern days, when the age of Kali is so disturbing, practicing, everyone is untrained in the art of bodily exercise. Concentration of the mind is more easily attained these days by chanting the holy name of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The results are more effective than those derived from the inner exercise of the life air. So Prabhupada immediately transformed what was there, a yogi practicing this physical yoga, into devotional service. Prabhupada is like a catalyst. He tells us the catalyst for this day and age, in the age of Kali, is chanting Hare Krishna and devotional service to the Lord. This is the formula that will obtain. And it comes down by descending mercy, either from the Guru or the Lord himself. You get this joyful feeling within the heart that the Lord is satisfied. And when you put in all the effort you can only do your best because that's all you've got. But you find out through the lessons of Bhakti Yoga what to do, what not to do. And so this is the practice that is taught by Prabhupada to us to accomplish this yogic power, but with the blessing of Lord Chaitanya and his mercy. So, excuse me for a rather disruptive lesson, but certainly we have to carry on, and I'll have to find my notes later and look at it. But basically, that's the principle. What's being talked about in here is a conscious effort on our part to practice, but the Lord reciprocates either through his devotees or this inner feeling of happiness and peace by practice. And as we become regulated, it becomes part of our life and we become attached to it. This is the way of spiritual life. Okay. 2 minutes, questions. 3 minutes. Yeah. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Just wanted to ask, how do I know if I'm putting in my full effort?
How do you know? Well, you know when you don't do it. There's something that calls you a frustration. Because if you're half-hearted, what do you expect from Krishna? You get a reciprocation when it's full-hearted. That actually, the thing is, I tell you, Radhanath Swami's got a nice quotation. He was asked, what is the most important thing? What is the most important thing? And he replied, what you're doing now is the most important thing. You give it your full attention. You don't think whether you like it or not. That's the most important thing that you attend to. This will get you through. How do you know that I'm putting in my effort? You'll know when you do things full-hearted and you treat it in such a way that this is treasure, that it's a spiritual practice, it's service, and I don't want to lose it. Because if you're half-hearted, Krishna reciprocates with one in one's efforts. So if you're full-hearted, the joy comes. You'll know. You know. So we have to do things that we do want to do, we don't want to do. But sometimes we have to understand what you're asked to do comes from authority. And if you treat that person or in this world as Krishna, because instruction comes from Krishna through his devotees. If you can understand that, you should understand that's Krishna. And I was chastised once for not doing that, finding that thing. Mother Kalangana would say to me, why aren't you giving class or speaking in class? I said, Mother Kalangana, I'm not capable of it, actually. I'm not up to it. She said, what? You've been asked and you refused? You're refusing Krishna. That's Krishna's representative. You cannot refuse. So we have to understand that whoever's coming to you and giving you service, they're Krishna's authority. They have Krishna's authority behind him because he's been put in that position. Nobody likes to be a boss. It's not an enviable task because they have to tell people to do things they don't want to do. It's a tough one. But we do. We have to do it to grow up. We're not kids anymore. We have to do what we've been asked to do. So Krishna's trying to get us to grow up in spiritual life, to understand that actually full-hearted service is the way. Give what you got. Nothing else. Instead of half-hearted, full-hearted. Otherwise you're only half alive if you're half-hearted. Because it's based on what I want. We've got to die to this life of taking and be born into a life of giving. And that's a fact. So, okay.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, as I say, sorry about the higgledy-piggledy class. But thank you.